Welcome to University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick, news director with KUNM. Infertility is something people often suffer alone, and yet it's more common than many people realize. The World Health Organization says globally, 1 in 6 people experience infertility. Many turn to in vitro fertilization. The CDC found over 300,000 people in the United States underwent IVF cycles in 2020 alone. It's an expensive and often exhausting process. Eggs are fertilized with sperm outside the body, and then the embryo is transferred to the uterus. But there are many steps within that process, and sometimes after all that, there's no successful pregnancy. Photographer Rachel Cox went through this with her partner. She found a lack of representation and understanding of IVF in art and media, and decided to use her experience to try and normalize IVF and to empower those experiencing infertility. An exhibit of her work is on display at the University of New Mexico Art Museum called Notes on Care. Cox is an alum of the UNM Photography Department and now teaches at the University of Iowa. She will give an artist talk on October 24th at the Physics and Astronomy Building at UNM. Cox says she began taking the photographs for personal reasons, to connect in a different way with her partner.
Well, when they were first made, when I first took the photographs, I wasn't sure if I was going to share them with anyone or show them to people. It wasn't something I made for a specific project or a specific exhibition or something like that. It was just a way to kind of process and like grapple with the experiences of going through IVF. Also as a way to figure out like different types of connections between my partner and I. You know, whenever you're doing IVF, you're on a lot of drugs, you're on a lot of hormones. You're definitely not feeling sexy. You don't want to have sex with your partner. You're not supposed to anyway, because of all the drugs in your body and how many like eggs are being formed. So because we couldn't like connect in a physical way, I was thinking about other types of connections that are there between us. And so these pictures are somewhat collaborative where, you know, we're like kind of arranging our bodies together in our bedroom, in our domestic space. And we're like going through this process of injecting me with a progesterone hormone shot every day. And that felt weird. You know, that wasn't something we're familiar with. I've never given myself an injection. You know, my partner had never given anyone an injection. So it was sort of like, here's something new and uncomfortable. Here's something that's relatively sad and frustrating, but there's other things going on that we can still sort of celebrate. And then through making the pictures, it also was a way to kind of remember the experience in a different way. Like I remember making those photographs with him rather than, you know, remembering maybe the anxiety and the grief of taking the injections. So I made the pictures for a couple of years before I started actually deciding to show them. And I wanted to share them because I hadn't seen a lot of photographs of IVF injections before. Now, when you Google search, there's actually a lot more like objective, like photographs of someone using a needle and injecting themselves in their abdomen or whatever. But at the time, like 5 years ago, that was a lot harder to find. I also hadn't seen a lot of visual art that looked at infertility or kind of addressed the struggle to try to build one's family. There's like a lot of really great work out there about motherhood and childbirth, but this was just a different kind of topic that I hadn't seen much of. And I know it's very prevalent, like infertility and IVF and IUI and a lot of other assisted reproductive technologies are becoming more widespread, but it's not something that's like talked about a lot or seen a lot of. So the idea was to get it out there to maybe connect with other people and have conversations like this, where you just talk to folks about, you know, what the significance of these, you know, like reproductive health procedures are, and maybe making people feel like they're not as alone as they might feel, which is pretty common and when you're going through these processes.
You mentioned anxiety and grief. Could you talk a little bit more about that? I don't know how many people understand the whole process of in vitro fertilization and what you have to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety. Right now, the data that I received from our IVF clinic says that about 35 to 40% of the time, IVF results in a viable live birth. So I think there's also misconceptions out there that IVF is like, we'll fix everything. Like this is like a surefire way to have a baby, and it's not. It works less than half the time. And there's a lot of steps involved in the process. You know, you take hormones that cause you to ovulate, like super ovulate. So every follicle on your ovary, which has the capability of producing an egg, produces an egg at the same time. So you might get anywhere from 3 to 15 eggs just based on how well you respond to that stage of the process. That's just stage one. So like there's all these phases that you have to hit in order to proceed to the next stage. So you're always just like waiting. It's such a weird disembodied experience. Like you're taking these drugs, you're waiting to get checked by an ultrasound to see how your, you know, follicles are growing. If you have enough eggs that are ready to be, that might, your body might be releasing soon, you then go in through, it's like a very minor procedure, but you still have to be anesthetized where they extract the eggs. Once the eggs are extracted, they'll tell you how many you have. And in my case, we never really got that many, between 1 and 3 eggs each time I went through the process. And then those eggs are immediately fertilized by your partner's sperm. That's another kind of stage, you know, like another benchmark to hit. And then an embryo is created from that fertilization process. And sometimes those don't happen. You know, you need to find a viable, like healthy looking embryo that's expanding the way that the embryologist wants to see. And then you're like, okay, you've got 1 or 2 embryos, which is actually not too bad to use to finally implant back into someone's uterus to potentially grow into a child. And so there's so many steps along the way. It's a very long process and it's like just riddled with anxiety. And there's always, you hit barriers, you know, it's really common for people not to like move beyond certain stages. And it's also really disheartening to make it all the way through, right? To like implant the embryo and it just doesn't grow. And that's something that also happened to my partner and I. So there is a lot of grief. There's like multiple stages where loss can happen. And it's a hard type of loss to process. I mean, from my perspective, it's not a loss of losing a child per se, but a loss of a possibility. You know, it's like you have hope to move to this next phase and then that doesn't work out. And for a lot of people who go through IVF, they do multiple rounds. So when you go through this multiple times over the course of many years, it gets exhausting. Yeah. And there's a lot of anxiety associated with it. So it's definitely not an easy thing to do.
It's also very expensive.
It is. Like my partner and I are super fortunate because I work for a university where I have good health insurance. But if we didn't have health insurance, it was going to be $22,000 for each round of IVF. The medication alone is about $6,000 to $8,000. And so there's just so many barriers for people who need to access it. The CDC has really good reporting on how many people are going through IVF. And in 2020, there was like 320,000 people who went through in vitro fertilization just in 1 year. That's also a COVID year. So probably there was less people who were able to access that. But think about like all the folks who like really need to use that, but just don't have the money. There's probably considerable amounts of people who could benefit from that. But the accessibility just isn't an option, you know?
What do you think people don't know or understand about IVF that you hope they'll learn from your show?
There's something about the normalization of it, which, you know, I'm still grappling with it. I'd heard of it, but I didn't know a lot about it. And it seemed like this crazy last resort, like rare kind of thing that I had no information about. And so when I started going through it and just researching things on my own and kind of paying attention to how many folks were coming through the clinic in Iowa City that I went to, there's just so many people doing it. There's so many people who need IVF as well as other things like IUIs. The prevalence of that need, I think, is really important to know. And also that there's so many different ways to like build a family. You know, when you're going through reproductive assistant technologies, you're able to decide how and like when you want to build a family. And I think that is super important, that access to reproductive care, including abortion care for people who are seeking fertility treatments, is very necessary. Folks are a little bit more higher risk when they're doing IVF. And so needing to access that kind of care is something I had to use when I was an IVF patient. And it's something I talk about when I talk about the work. But I also, when people are looking at the photographs, I think there's a lot of empowerment there. You know, I think the idea of being able to have some kind of control over how you build your family and also how you kind of view yourself as a person creating a child. I really got hung up on like the expectations of my body being able to produce a kid, right? Because I'm a woman, I have a uterus. And even though I also identify as a feminist, I was still really disappointed in my body for not being able to perform in this way. But I think there's other things that are valuable about you besides your ability to have a child. And so the images are designed to be sort of empowering. You know, that's something else I hope folks who are, or maybe other people who've experienced like similar losses, can find strength in the fact that like there's a lot of other value for you that's not tied to your body, and that there's a lot of other connections you can make with your partner that can still flourish, like still thrive through grief. And that I'm someone who knows that like firsthand that there can be a lot of grief and sadness going through this, but there's so much other, there's a lot of other strength that's like unique from person to person to sort of find as you're like moving through that process.
This is University Showcase. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm speaking with photographer Rachel Cox about her current exhibit at the UNM Art Museum, Notes on Care. It examines her own journey with infertility and IVF and the larger social and political context around these issues.
You have a few nudes of yourself injecting hormones, and of course, female nudes are prevalent throughout Western art. What were you trying to do with your nudes specifically?
Yeah, I don't make self-portraits. So this was like not something I was really very comfortable with from the beginning, but I used myself a lot because I'm speaking from my personal experience, and my body is so much a part of this that it just seemed the right decision to make. I started taking photographs, like maybe just a few with clothes on, but I found them really distracting. The clothing was very distracting. And also I'm thinking about the body, you know. Now, when I look at those pictures of myself nude, I just think about a body, and I think about this like fight that was happening internally with my body, like the misconnections between what you want your body to do and what it actually is going to do. And so I wanted to feel like I was confronting that, I was addressing that, and that I was empowering myself to become more than what my body was giving me. And so there's a photograph of full figure where I'm nude looking into the camera, like injecting my abdomen. And the idea of that is, even though I'm looking in the camera and I might be making direct eye contact with the viewer, I'm really making eye contact with myself. That's what I wanted to do, is to remember this moment and remember that that was one of my last rounds of IVF. And that I was kind of done, like not that I was done wanting to have a child with my partner, but I was done getting so upset about the fact that my body wasn't doing what I wanted it to do, that I wanted to confront that head on and accept, you know, this is what my body is. This is what it's capable of. If it's not going to do the thing I want it to do, then I'll find some other way to like make this work.
This really resonates for me because I had infertility. I did not go through IVF, but all the things you're describing, I think a lot of women will relate because infertility is a lot more prevalent than people realize. You also took photos of hands. Can you talk about what inspired those images?
You know, when I first started looking for images of people going through IVF doing self-injections, when I would go to fertility clinic homepages and things, a lot of the imagery is of these hands, I would say in a framed in sort of a spiritual light, you know, like two hands kind of cupped with maybe a glowing orb. The connections between like some kind of spirituality, spiritual belief, and the start of life was a type of symbolism that I saw frequently when looking through IVF. And IVF is very much a scientific process. So I was thinking about the like complexities probably a lot of people go through who do have specific religious beliefs where there are ideas of conception and the origin of life and, you know, are at odds with what happens in IVF. And we're already seeing that across the country. Like that is definitely center stage right now. And in my mind, I was thinking about like, is this like a way to make people feel more comfortable with a process that is very scientific? Because you don't want to show a petri dish with like an egg with, you know, implanting a single sperm inside of it. Like that's not a cool way to like get people to want to do the IVF process, even though that's exactly what happens. So I was thinking a lot about that, just like the way the process is advertised, but also thinking about religious symbolism of granting life or denying life, and also thinking like maybe more broad about who has power and access to grant life or to take it away. And then that's a really complicated thing to make a single still picture about all these different things. But I really wanted to make a picture that was sort of somewhere in the middle of granting access or denying it, and also like a very powerful, strong hand. And it's also kind of resembles maybe high Renaissance paintings of hands that you would see on the Sistine Chapel or in like a painting of like God and Jesus or the Trinity or something like this.
You actually do have photos of embryos and you call them incompatible with life. I was very moved by the emotions these evoke because it's both sadness, but also joy. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, the incompatible with life is actually like a clinical phrase that doctors use when an embryo is genetically tested before it's implanted into you, and it possesses chromosomal abnormalities that would not cause the embryo to develop. Or if you are pregnant or have an embryo implanted into you and you miscarry due to some sort of genetic abnormality, and that's called incompatible with life. And that's what's said to you or emailed to you in your online doctor message chart system. So it's not the nicest thing to say to someone. There's probably a better term that could be used. But I heard it a lot. You know, we heard it a lot, my partner and I, when we had so many failed kind of embryos happen. And the images in the show are platinum prints of embryos that were photographed through a microscope. The embryologist takes a photograph of the embryo on day 5 when it has to be implanted into your body. And so that's where I got the files, was actually from the embryologist. I didn't make those pictures myself. But the embryos are all very different. They're at different like stages of expansion. And the embryo is given like a visual rating based on how it's expanding on day 5. It's like poor, fair, good, excellent. I mean, I don't know the specifics. I'm not an embryologist, but I was told they're looking at the rate of expansion and how it's expanding on that day. And that's how they apply that rating. However, just through the microscope, there's no indication of chromosomal abnormalities, right? Like extra or missing chromosomes. They can't look at that at all. Two of the embryo platinum prints that are in the show were given good high ratings, but they both had genetic abnormalities. And so whenever those pregnancies did not work out and I got this test result of incompatible with life, it just felt like there was so much work and labor that had gone into creating that embryo that it deserved a little bit better. So I used a process that historically is reserved for valued subject matter, very sentimental subject matter. Platinum and palladium metals are very expensive to use. There's a lot of longevity in terms of how long those prints can last. So they're usually reserved for some kind of subject matter that's fairly precious. And I knew I wanted to use that process to kind of like reinvest the images of those embryos with value and love and like honor the work that it took to get to that phase. And then there's a third embryo photograph in the set of three in the exhibition that's called Capable of Life. And that's an embryo created with a donor egg. The last time I went through IVF, my partner and I used a donor egg and then made the embryo and implanted the embryo inside my body. And that one resulted in a viable pregnancy and the birth of my daughter. And so that one got the same exact visual rating as the other ones. It didn't, no more, no less. However, it did result in a viable pregnancy. So there's a lot of struggle to get to the joy that you were talking about in the end. But also it's very interesting as someone who's like, always thinking about the power of images, like how we choose and select which embryos to use based on what we see through a microscope. And how accurate is that really in telling us what can result in life and like what doesn't?
You're listening to University Showcase, and I'm Megan Kamrick. I'm talking with photographer Rachel Cox about her current show at the UNM Art Museum, Notes on Care, about infertility and IVF. She will give an artist talk on October 24th at 5 p.m. in the UNM Physics and Astronomy Building. You finally had a successful embryo and resulted in your daughter, and you had to use a donor egg. This might be very personal. You don't have to answer it. Did you have conflicting emotions around that?
I think when we started the process of IVF, they give you this whole spectrum of what your possibilities are. Like if this doesn't work, you can do donor egg, donor embryo, you can adopt. And at the time we were so deer in the headlights just starting IVF that we were like, well, we would like to try to use genetic material from each of us if possible. And so after doing that 3 times and it not working 3 times in a row, and the success rating I think we received was less than 4%. We had less than 4% chance of this working. We were like, do we want to just keep on doing this? You know, I was 39, you know, like, do we want to just keep on trying and like suffer all these losses? Or do we want to try with a donor egg? And by that time, we were very committed. We knew we wanted to have a child and, you know, we were committed either way. So we were like, okay, let's just try this and see if it works. Using a donor egg, especially when they're attributing infertility to the person creating the egg, like using a different egg increases your chances considerably. And so the donor egg process is strange. It doesn't seem to have as much oversight as I thought it would. You know, the websites we were given to browse felt a lot like dating websites where you see pictures of women from all over the world. You know, I was conflicted with maybe does oversight also reach out to these people in other countries who are going through IVF to donate their eggs? What kind of healthcare are they getting? Like, you know, because a lot of these folks are coming from countries that are not as wealthy as the United States and have really kind of lax regulations for protecting people who want to do surrogacy or egg donation. So that was complicated. We didn't receive any coaching on that. We did find a particular donor that we felt was a good match, and your kind of healthcare team here at the University of Iowa Hospital that we worked with reaches out to that clinic and gets a lot of medical information about the donor and then decides if it's a good fit for you. You purchase the eggs, which is very expensive, and insurance does not pay for it. Usually it's somewhere around $16,000, 16 to 18.
Wow.
And you buy a cohort of eggs, which is usually somewhere around 6 eggs. That's a fully out of pocket expense. And so once you buy them, then they are thawed because you buy them frozen. And then they kind of go through the same process as if it was my own egg. Like they're fertilize with your partner's semen or, you know, donor semen, whatever you're going to use. And then embryos are grown and implanted back into your body. So it was another set of complications. It's such a strange disembodied experience because, you know, I'm at work and I'm like calling into the like lab to see like, okay, how did donor eggs do? Like how many embryos are we getting? You know, it's this weird thing that happens outside of you that you like have no control over, but we were very fortunate. This doesn't work the first time for everyone, but it did for us. And my daughter is about a year and a half old now, and she was born without complications. So it was a long journey, but in the end, you know, we were able to have a kid and, you know, build our family.
You're bringing back a lot of memories for me when I had gone through a lot of testing and, you know, going to one more appointment, and the doctor, I'm sure she thought she was being helpful, but she just laid it on the table and said, yeah, I don't believe in beating around the bush. I think you should do IVF with donor eggs. And do you want a list of donors? And a deer in the headlights. I was like, what? I was like, are you telling me I'm infertile?
Yeah.
And they hand you this list. At the time, it was less electronic. And yeah, it was like something out of Gattaca. I'm like, you just get sort of race or ethnicity and education level. It was so odd.
Yeah, it is odd. It feels like there could be more mentorship or coaching or a preview. Yeah. Or something to kind of prepare you for that. And I mean, we were in a different situation where the kind of like processing and acceptance of my infertility had like a year and a half to go through. But I imagine if that's not even something where someone gives you the time to like digest that, they're like, okay, let's just skip over that part and go to this other thing without pausing to like respect what that means for someone. Like, I imagine that's really hard to take.
Yeah. As you just mentioned, there's a lack of agency and control for people going through all this. Has the project helped you take back some of that control?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, I think especially the injection photos when I was getting towards the end, kind of in my last round of IVF and making those pictures, I had kind of gotten to this point emotionally where I knew that building a family was possible in other ways, in other means. And that I didn't need to feel so distraught about my body not cooperating. I mean, I still feel that way sometimes. It's hard. I mean, we're like, even as like little kids, you're just indoctrinated like so much in terms of what does a woman's body do? What is the ultimate performance of what, you know, a woman's reproductive system is supposed to do? So for that to not work over and over again is hard. So the pictures definitely helped with that. I think like meeting other women is also a big part of that, which isn't something that's really prevalent in the images, but happens a lot when I show the work or talk about the work with friends or people in, you know, schools or galleries or whatever, like people I'm talking to you, like right now, just like the sheer amount of people who have some kind of relationship to this is kind of amazing. Whether it's not them personally, it's their sister, or it's also when you talk to men, there's a lot of men who will also share what it is like from their perspective if they're in a heterosexual relationship and this happened to their partner, like hearing from them. Or there's a lot of shared narratives that are going on through this kind of thing. And I think that just being more, I don't know if comfortable, it's never going to feel comfortable to talk about it in public, but it should not be frowned upon. It shouldn't feel taboo. having spaces where people can share the reality of what happens to bodies as they age, or sometimes folks go through infertility, like in their 20s, just talking about that. This happens a lot. Like, let's be open about it. Let's share that information. I think that's just going to empower anyone to feel a little bit better or not in the dark when something like this happens to them.
IVF is so much in the news and the political zeitgeist right now. It's already so difficult, as you've laid out, to go through infertility and things like IVF. How do the current political battles around reproductive health exacerbate all that?
I mean, what I've seen, right, is one side of things. Like when you watch, I watch PBS, I'm hearing about things through PBS, or I'm hearing about things from, you know, essentially the people who lost their eggs and filed a lawsuit, you know, saying that this was essentially murder. Like, that's this one side of things that I see. So it's hard to say something definitively, but from that perspective broadly, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what IVF is. How does it work? I think that it's so complicated to talk about the process and apply it to religious beliefs, because in the process of IVF, you have to be comfortable with discarding a lot of eggs. So if it's okay to do that, but it's not okay to discard an embryo, like, is there this very definitive line of when a life begins? And who's the one that says that? Because IVF is, it's complicated, especially for folks who, you know, follow certain like religious practices. And so the discarding of the eggs and also embryos, because if you're older, you really need to have your embryos genetically tested before you use them. All of our embryos were genetically tested and they all had chromosomal abnormalities. So you'd have to be comfortable discarding embryos. And that's just how the process works. But also those things safeguard the person who is going to potentially grow that fetus into a baby. Because if you implant something that has chromosomal abnormalities, you're going to need to do a DNC, which is essentially like a medically necessary abortion. There's so many steps involved. It's very complicated. When you hear people, like, especially in political kind of conversations, feeling very strongly about things, they're not medical professionals. I mean, that's the thing we don't hear from in a lot of this political debate. Just medical professionals and geneticists should be the ones telling us about this process, so that folks who are listening understand exactly what's going on and they can get kind of like a broader understanding of why people are making the decisions they would be making. Also, in my state, some people in our political sphere are kind of taking a similar approach to Alabama, where they think that conception is where life starts, and that would affect IVF. And that would affect, now that we know this, hundreds of thousands of people every year. And so it's just a very muddy gray area. And it's like a complicated area to try to insert kind of political oversight. Those things just don't seem to want to mix.
Well, Rachel Cox, I appreciate you talking with me. I really appreciate your work.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk with me too. And I also want to thank Mary Statzer at the UNM Art Museum, who's the one who worked with me to curate the show. This is also like not an easy subject to show at a lot of places. You know, there is a lot of nudity. There's a lot of, you know, open conversation about abortion access and about IVF and reproductive care, and also a lot of conversation about love and sexuality, you know, with my partner. And so I really wanted to shout out to her and the entire museum staff for being really open and willing and generous with their time to host the show. And hopefully folks will go see it.
That was photographer Rachel Cox talking about her show Notes on Care, currently at the UNM Art Museum. She will give an artist talk on Thursday, October 24th at 5 p.m. at the UNM Physics and Astronomy Building. Find out more at kunm.org. That's also where you can find all our episodes of University Showcase. Thanks to Associate Professor David Bashwinner for our theme music, and thank you for listening. I'm Megan Kamrick.